Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Collision Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another one of the darling boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on this weekend's episode of AEW Collision. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. We do daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review AEW Collision, but also AEW Dynamite, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. Oh! Pay-per-views, premium live events, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bigger quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review this weekend's episode of AEW Collision and Battle of the Belts, with the usual caveat that if no titles changed hands at Battle of the Belts, we will not be reviewing it. And let me just check my notes. Oh, no, yeah, nothing happened.
And one of them wasn't even a title match.
No, one of them was a title eliminator.
What's the point?
Rocky Romero still didn't win. So I'll full disclosure, I didn't watch Battle of the Belts.
I did not either.
I can't actually remember the last Battle of the Belts I actually watched.
First one?
Yeah, probably. That's probably the last time a title changed hands as well. Anyway, we're here to talk about AEW Collision. And before we get into our review of it, and I'll get your thoughts on it, I want to give a shout out to AK McCrack. Ado or Ado, I do apologise, on X, who tweeted us a bit of a review from attending Collision. So thank you for this. They say, thoughts from attending Collision last night. Great arena for AEW. Third different one they've run in Cincinnati. And I hope they keep going there. Didn't get the mock stuff in arena. I assume people would expect him then. Two straight tech matches killed the crowd. Oh, and back to the audience promos in person are not a great experience. Having Thunder Rosa cut the promo of her career with her back to us was a bummer.
Yeah, it's a good visual for TV, but the whole point in a promo is that you want to, you know, play to the crowd, the same as a match. Like, you want to be able to sort of manipulate their emotion, appeal to them, and all the rest of it. So it's something WWE did for years. Oakland position. So I get it, looks great for TV, but yeah, there's a byproduct on the live experience, I guess.
But what did you make of this show?
Thought it was really good, but there's an element of it's TV dark. I've used this before, people did not like it, I don't care. It just feels like there's a filler element of this act needs a win. Let's give them one in a very, very, very routine bout that no one will remember. And I guess there's a logic to doing that. We talk about how successful WWE's approach is. Sometimes that approach is the star is on the show. They might not do much, but they are, you know, it reinforces that they matter and that you should pay attention to them. But that works when you do it every single week. That was the last time we really saw Garcia. It just, a lot of wrestling, minimal hooks, angles, promos. It was mainly fine.
I loved the main event though.
I've got a problem with it, but I loved it.
Yeah, I agree with you in particular this week of all weeks, obviously with Dynasty being, well, under a week away now. It was, as I said to you earlier in the office, House of Black in trios action against Andretti and Dante Martin. Yes, Dante Martin and Matt Sydal. And I wonder who's going to get a victory there, considering House of Black are facing Briscoe and Copeland and Kingston at the Pape. But anyway, let's get into this show, because the show opened. I like the team of Tony Schiavone and Matt Menard on commentary. I
look, yes, me too.
Work really well together. I also really like the addition, briefly, of Anthony Ogogo to that mix. But before we get into the show, they throw to what happened at New Japan Windy City Riot in Chicago. John Moxley defeating Tetsuya Naito to become IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. We'll talk a little bit more about this on the Dynamite preview later on this week, because obviously that's when he's scheduled to appear.
You also talked about it on the Q&A, which should be hitting your feeds now.
Sometime soon, yeah. But yeah, cool, okay.
No, it's good, it's good. New Japan needed something. They got that something. John Moxley's always wanted to be the ace. He's got the chance to be the top guy in a promotion again. I've talked a lot as well about how this AEW New Japan promotion is completely lopsided at this point. Okada and Ospreay both heading from one to the other was like, Jesus Christ, underline that yet more. I've advocated for Wardlow and Hook to both do an excursion there. Moxley doesn't need an excursion at this point of his career to fill out any, to find his final form or something, or get experience. He's already, you know, that kind of wrestler. He's already there. But it gets Moxley out of that AEW malaise.
Yes.
I mean, he's still doing excellent work, but, you know, a nice little feud with FTR. Some of the action in which was incredible. Kind of below a star of Moxley's standing, but that's what happens when you sign so many stars. A good move for both parties. Moxley not being properly within AEW for the foreseeable. And I mean, I know he's on Dynamite this week. Is a good thing, because he can only come back fresher, which he advocated for constantly. New Japan needed it, so a good move for all.
Yeah, working backwards, it does kind of now justify not having the Blackpool Combat Club in the tag tournament. It's stupid at the time, because like, you just beat FTR and FTR in the tournament. But Danielson would be like, no, I want to prepare. I don't want to focus on tag team wrestling. I want to prepare for Ospreay. And, you know, Moxley's like, well, I'm going to go and fight for the world title in New Japan, so I'm not going to
do some training or whatever.
Anyway, speaking of the BCC, Danielson and Claudio got a great promo to open the show. They put over Mox's win. They talk about their schedule coming up, mocking Don Callis. It's much easier to beat them than it is to hurt them. I thought it was a nice line. And Castagnoli said that the hard work they put in when the cameras were off make them tougher and better. Daniel said they couldn't be hurt and they aren't going to be beaten tonight. We'll circle back to this for the main event.
This match was so awesome in the main event that I'm going to get my critique of it out of the way now.
Okay.
Because I think they worked so hard and they assembled something so cool that I'll just praise it to the hilt.
Yes.
The premise is stupid. So the premise is that Don Callis wants to weaken Danielson ahead of his match with Will Ospreay. He sought to do this by having his guys, his family, who he obviously believes suitable to do the job, of weakening Bryan Danielson ahead of his match with Will Ospreay. Cool. Don't have to win, you just have to hurt them. Because I'm going to stress this again, they want to weaken Bryan Danielson to give Will Ospreay a better chance of beating him. Why then has, from Revolution and then two subsequent episodes of Dynamite, has Will Ospreay wrestled Konosuke Takeshita, Kyle Fletcher, and Powerhouse Hobbs?
Maybe they weren't laying it in. I don't know.
That's even stupider. Yeah. That's the thing. It's one of those things where if you extend the logic of it, it just makes less sense.
Yes.
So for Ospreay, the idea is, well, iron will sharpen iron. We'll bring out the best in each other and we'll get the group over, or we'll make the group become the best versions of themselves, because iron will sharpen iron. So to not sharpen, does that not make Daniel... If you use that logic...
Oh, so you agree.
Yeah. Using that logic, isn't Danielson getting better by virtue of being in the ring? Does that not make Don Callis a moron? It was just on that. It's so weird how the premise to Ospreay Takeshita made no sense, but was like, I'll give you it.
Yeah.
The Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan analogy was really well done. But these two things cannot exist at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they do. It's just stupid. It's so overthought.
I agree, yeah. The first match of the night was, as we mentioned, the House of Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews and Malakai Black versus Action Andretti, Dante Martin and Matt Sydal. No Darius Martin because he's off getting his pilot's license.
Yeah. What?
Wait.
Top flight?
Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah, that's great.
Back and forth early on, and then Brody King comes in, and it's not exactly back and forth after that because he flattens all three of them because he's mint. Andretti finally gets Sydal in there. He runs wild, but then he gets caught. Buddy Matthews drops, power bombs him onto Malakai Black's knees.
Buddy Matthews in this match was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, power bombs him onto Malakai Black's knees. That takes
that
a break.
That was great.
Lovely spot, that, yeah. After a commercial, Sydal finally gets to the corner, brings in Dante Martin. He runs wild. He ducked a kick from Malakai, hit a Pele for a near fall. But then Black comes back with a rising knee. Andretti comes in, takes out Matthews with a dive, but Black lands a moonsault to the floor and hits Andretti with a big kick. They set up for Dante's Inferno, but the lads come in and hit triple super kicks. Everyone starts flying around all over the place. It looks like Brody King might get the pin to win the match when Dante Martin just splashes onto the pile to break it up. Andretti hit a springboard 450, but Brody King kicked out at one.
Yeah.
Yeah, caught Sydal on a Meteora and just batted him in the corner. Triple team corner attack from the House of Black. And in the end, Brody King pins Matt Sydal to get the win for his team.
Really, really, really good. This is what AEW Trios Wrestling should look like. And again, hugely impressed by the House of Black's ability to just look invincible. Like, they are master strategists. Like, you don't really have a hope in hell's chance against them. And yet they're still able to create drama within that sort of performance. I loved the spot, the powerbomb onto the knees. They're so good at these creative wrinkles in their matches to make it look like, oh God, we're going against the House of Black.
Yeah.
We're kind of doomed. They can kill us from all angles. Between the three of them, they've got every single offensive tactic
yeah.
that could end your night. Just really fun, really exhilarating. Like, not on the level of the very best AEW Trios matches, but a great way to open a TV show. This is what it should have been all along. This is what it somehow isn't.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of match that somehow went away when the Trios title was properly launched after that first best of seven feud. Like, I just had a really good time with this. And the House of Black continue to be brilliant at being so imposing. And the way they structure these matches as well, it's like, anything you can do, we can do that better.
Yeah.
Like, when Brody King does that dive and wipes them all out, it's like, you cannot beat these guys. You cannot do that at all. I end this Bang Bang Scissors Gang nonsense.
I struck cracking my brain for a split second there going, who are the Trios champions now?
And actually, rebuild the division in this specific image.
I agree. We got a recap of what happened with Tony Storm. Toneless Timey Storm attacking Thunder Rosa and rubbing the face paint off. And Mina Shirakawa. Her debut. And with Mariah May in the
you
kiss.
You enjoy that?
It's good. Then you've got Storm and May and Luther in the back with Lexi Nair. She's like, what's all this about a kiss? And Tony Storm thinks she's talking about her. And it's like, no, not that one. Storm's like, doesn't matter. She's facing, I've forgotten how to pronounce this now.
Azumi.
Azumi, thank you. She's getting ready to face Azumi. A couple of nice lines in here from Tony. Wondering if Azumi wants to kiss her bottom like all the other perverts out there. She's going to give her a beating tonight that would be featured in a fetish periodical. She does the line and leaves. Very good stuff. And good news for you now, Sid. We're back to Chris Jericho because we get a recap of what happened with Jericho and Hook and the Shibata match because we're about to get Shibata and Lee Moriarty.
Chris Jericho teamed with Shibata?
You're joking. Not another one?
Charmless.
But luckily there's cameras there after Dynamite when Jericho catches up with Taz. He's been trying to get in touch with Hook, but he's just not returning his calls or his messages. And Taz says, look, Hook's his own man. He kind of pissed him off. But I'll broker a meeting between the two of you on Dynamite on Wednesday. So you got to look that for look forward to in the preview.
Every time I watch Chris Jericho do anything, my interest in a pay-per-view diminishes ever so slightly because I'm thinking, I know what you like, Tony. You always had one match too many. The All-Star Scramble was at the, Revolution was good.
Without and I know it was going to be Meat Madness, to be fair.
Yeah.
But
Jericho's got to get his beep. Every time I see Chris Jericho, I'm thinking, oh, man, he's going to threaten Dynasty. It's like, oh, Jericho's coming. It's like, you know, when you go for, like, a night out.
No, yeah.
Or an activity with, like,
schoolmates from back in the day.
Yeah. I was going to say workmates, but I get on with everyone at work. It all works where it's like, oh, Jim coming. It's, like, it's kind of shocking not to invite him.
Yeah.
But Rodri didn't.
There's no Pam's engaged, right? You can't be doing that in the workplace. Yeah.
But he's that unwanted. I forgot about him. He will be there ruining the vibe.
The Columbo. Just one more match.
Yeah.
Oh, that was perfect. Then we got the Shibata Lee Moriarty match off the back of Moriarty obviously pinning Shibata with the bloody confusion between Chris Jericho and Hook. But we got Anthony Ogogo on commentary, which is great.
He's class, man. Just such a welcome return.
Yeah, he's really good. Obviously, he's got the British leanings within terms of his references and what have you. So we appreciate that probably more than most. And I also
it worked for his character because he thinks Britain's the best.
Yeah, and I loved him just saying about how not only am I an Olympian, which like 0.001% of people ever actually achieve, I medaled as well.
Yeah.
So,
What are you?
In comparison, I love him. Love a go-go. And I've missed this. I was like, you've established this amazing threat he had, slightly undermined it with Cody, the Cody match. But he was, saving America, of course, Cody in that match. And then, where's a go-go gone?
Where's a go-go gone?
He disappeared for like, 2.5 years or something? How long's it been?
He was just winning loads on Dark, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Not doing much. And then he did an excursion of sorts for Progress. Some indies.
Yeah, he's...
bided his time.
I think he's had Miller on his podcast. Go and check that out. Two very lovely men there.
Miller's disgustingly nice, isn't he? Spent a lot of time with him in America. And you think, you watch people like that on YouTube, and you think, you're a grifter.
Yeah.
You're a grifter.
Especially if
I get you. I respect the hustle, but you're a grifter.
Especially if I wasn't 100%, I would not be as chipper as he is.
And you meet him in real life and you say, what a top bloke he
is. Hope he's enjoying his time in America. Still there, of course.
Still there.
Anyway, Moriarty, Shibata. They go back and forth. Moriarty has to escape a figure four, rolls out to the floor. Referee gets distracted by Shane Taylor and Gogo just drops Shibata with a liver shot, I think it was, or just a body shot one way or another. I like the fact that Schiavone called it a jab, and he was like, it's not a jab, it's a hook. But Shibata only just makes it back into the ring, and Moriarty gets a near fall off the back of it to take us to break. And we come back. Lee Moriarty, I love you, mate. What are you doing? He decides to chop Shibata.
Yeah.
He just walks through the chops because, checks notes, he's Shibata. Chops him to the mat. This is Shibata to Moriarty. Hesitation, dropkick in the corner. Every now and again, I stop myself midway through a match because I didn't really know a lot about Shibata previously, but I remember your giddiness when he just popped up at that New Japan show.
Yeah,
and
thought,
maybe, just maybe, he could be back. And I'm like, oh, he's just back wrestling now.
Yeah.
Like, we had that brief period where it's like, he's wrestling, but he's wrestling like ZSJ and very,
cagey outings.
And then I was like, oh, he's just doing it now. Yeah. Awesome. Anyway, so they trade big boots. Shibata eventually counters the fang, ripcord slap, penalty kick, 1-2-3, post-match, Shane Taylor attacks Shibata.
Bitchmaker.
Always forget that what the name is. But Hook makes the save, drops Moriarty with a suplex, and stares down with Shane Taylor to see, of course, if later on in the night Shane Taylor could defeat him for the FTW Championship. He didn't.
No.
But I like Hook saving Shibata. And
that's two cool guys.
Yeah.
And Chris Jericho. That could be the name of the stable.
I like seeing Lee Moriarty here against Shibata. I think it's really fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fine. It wasn't great. Again, I know there was some story development here. This is what I was talking about with that. You do necessary, if not hugely exciting things, because you sometimes have to do that on television. This is kind of a Panto Shibata match where you got your Shibata spot and you sort to reheat the aura and he wins and he's lost a lot. So what did this do? If I'm being honest, right, maybe I'm jet lagged. This felt like, right, who needs wins that we're going to use going forward? Shibata and Garcia, well, they can wrestle X and then they can wrestle Y and it's all, and we do it. I wasn't moved by it. It's still weird watching Shibata. Like, you don't know how much to invest. His position on the card doesn't necessarily reflect my huge, huge fandom of his. This is maybe a step in the right direction. Like, I think he should be winning matches, God damn it. He's Katsuyori Shibata. A fun bit of Shibata Panto, particularly with the chop spots, but nothing that I'm getting electrified by. But maybe you need these to just gently rehab his credibility. There's some good work in here, but look at these two wrestlers. There's never not going to be. You got a look on your face.
You said Panto in a sentence around Chris Jericho, and all I could think of, where's the best moments of my career? They're behind you. I'm making a comeback. Oh, no, you're not. Anyway, there's a couple of backstage promos that are kind of pointless to talk about now, but I'm going to mention them anyway. Athena, ROH Women's Champion, of course. She just defended it against Hikaru Shida at Supercard. You were there.
Yes. Turned into a really good match.
Billy Starks,
maybe,
of course.
Don't go 23 minutes on Dalton Castle versus Johnny T.
Billy Starks. That's awesome.
Who's asking for a 4.5-hour ROH show? And
on WrestleMania weekend in particular.
I can't remember who I was talking to, but they said they'd gone to a Stardom show, and they said that it went 2 hours. It was, like, so refreshing to have a very short show across WrestleMania weekend where you're just inundated with professional wrestling. But in general, everyone's inundated with professional wrestling. There's so much of it. I don't think there's a single person in that building at ROH Supercard who were like, oh, it was only 3 hours. You know what I mean? Like, what's the point? What you're doing is you're actively detracting from your own show and one of the most anticipated matches of it by making everything went 5 minutes too long.
Yeah.
It's such a great time. But I was watching Athena and Hikaru Shida thinking, God damn it. They deserve a much hotter atmosphere, but you flatten that crowd.
Mm. Anyway, Billy Starks reminds Athena that Red Velvet is very good. She says, I understand she's a threat, but I'm the forever Ring of Honor Women's World Champion, and I'll show the world what they've been missing. And she did, because she retained against Red Velvet. And then Roderick Strong and the Kingdom are backstage following a break with Lexi Nair. He takes issue with her giving credit to anyone else but him, Wardlow, of course. He's been doing it on his own, says Roddy, just like his friend Kyle O'Reilly, who's an inspiration. And tonight, Strong's going to give the beating of a lifetime to Rocky Romero. And he did, because Rocky Romero didn't win.
Because it's Battle of the Belts.
And that's Battle of the Belts. There we go. That's all of our coverage done on that. That was easy. Daniel Garcia versus, I've always called him Angelico.
Commentary pointed out.
Yeah, I always assume, because I was told in WCW, that's what you call him. Angelico. That's what he prefers to be called, apparently. So apologies if I've been offending him by calling him by the wrong name.
Everybody has.
Probably more offended, Angelico, by Daniel Garcia doing the 10 punches in the corner, then rubbing his cock in his face. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. Fun back and forth here. High kick, La Magistral cradle from Angelico. Garcia countered with a figure four, and they do like a booyah back and forth sequence, and then just end up kicking each other in
the
ropes.
I like that pissy element of it.
Yeah. Garcia hit a neck breaker. He's favoring his knee. He just basically punched his knee until it started working again. This was when he got the 10 punches in the corner, cock rubbing his face, back suplex, and gets the leg submission for the victory here.
A very well worked dark elevation match. That's what this was. Daniel Garcia, you probably looked at the spreadsheet. This has got spreadsheet booking all hour, thinking, right, Garcia, what have we done with him since Revolution when he didn't have his breakthrough moment, but you want the fans to believe in him. You've got a young stud. And you're thinking, I've really done too much with him over recent weeks. That's bad, because ahead of and at Revolution, it felt like he was on the cusp. Yeah. I just give him a win over Brian Cage. No, he's done a few jobs. Bobby Fish isn't still here. Jay Lethal, no.
Billy Gunn, definitely not.
Brian Keith, who's next on the old wheel? Angelico. Boom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't need to see this.
No.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, you did nothing for either of them.
But yeah.
You need, but like, you know, Garcia, I didn't think of this and think, all right, Garcia's back in the mix and he'll be contending for a title and I should believe in him. I'm thinking this felt obligatory.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Then we hear from Pac. He addresses Kazuchika Okada, wants to thank him for accepting his challenge and for hitting him with a lump of steel. He's got a perpetual headache. That serves as an inspiration for him. Pac says he's not flavor of the month. And Okada may think he's God's gift to wrestling, but he's not. He's crap. That tickled me. Pac says he's better than Okada, and he's going to prove it in front of the entire world at Dynasty.
Another good promo. Can I give you my controversial take?
Go on.
On Pac versus Okada.
I think we might be in agreement on this. Go on.
Right. I am looking at something research-wise on my phone, so forgive me if I appear ignorant or speak slowly. Right. Pac versus Okada, on paper, looks incredible.
Yes.
Pac's incredible. Okada's incredible. The match has never happened. It's fresh. It's dream match stuff. Each wrestler has got a tendency, not all the time, but sometimes, to go very, very, very slow. Sometimes miss a gear and then backload, if that's a word, all of their best stuff at the finish.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a tiny little worry, and I'm sorry, I will repeat myself when we come to preview this show, a tiny little worry that their worst layout impulses and pacing issues will collide with one another. I've just got a feeling this is going to go a bit slow for a bit long.
I agree. I think you might be right. Glass half full, you think we get two match of the year candidates. Glass half empty, you think, oh, I hope this doesn't take the edge off the main event by tiring people out and, yeah, not living up to expectation.
It's one of those as well, like, people look at Pac and Okada, and because they're so great, people think, all right, dream match. And you look at where it will be on the card and that it isn't the main event, and you think, 15 to 18 minutes of brilliance. They could go 10 very slow minutes, and I don't know, I just think that they...
Or it could be after, like, the ladder match. Or
they've got pacing issues that might collide in a pretty dull way.
Remind me.
I know that sounds sacrilegious, but I just want to be
right.
I want to be ahead of the curve.
And remind me later on this week when we go through this card, because we don't know what the main event's going to be. I've said the main event because I'm assuming Danielson Ospreay, but you could do the world title if the title's changing hands, for example. But remind me when we do the preview for the pape later on this week. Remind me to ask you the running order, the way you'd book the show in order, because I'm fascinated to know your thoughts on that. Sid, just checking my newt here. And it's just the one women's match here on Collision. By the way, just to get ahead of ourselves for Wednesday, a mixed tag does not equal two women's matches.
No, it doesn't. Because there's men involved.
It was a women's world title eliminator match, Toni Storm versus Azumi. They big up Azumi. They talk about her stats, 450 plus day reigners, stardom high speed champion, started wrestling at age 11. And she's there with Anna Jay. They're a team or friends now because they both agree that Toni Storm and Mariah May are stupid, which is completely believable. I talked to you about this because I have no idea who Azumi is, if I'm perfectly honest. I like the fact that she could barely see over the top rope. And I like the fact they established early, look how much smaller she is compared to Toni Storm. So when she tries to do a shoulder tackles, Toni Storm literally laughs it off. But eventually she gets caught by the speed and the velocity of Azumi. It looked great. It's a good opening exchange. Storm takes her out with some kicks, cuts her off on the apron, sends her flying with a big hip attack. In amongst all this, May and Jay, Rye May and Anna Jay, get into a brawl that takes them to the back. But Azumi comes back and boots Storm off the apron to take us to break. When we come back, Storm's taunting her again. Azumi comes back with forearms. Storm hits a headbutt. La Mystica and a head kick from Azumi, though, gets a bit of a comeback going for her. She hits a leg trap German suplex. Crowd are really into the match now. Hits a double stomp off the top as well for a two count. Then Storm comes back with a tree slam for a near fall. Very nearly gets the victory to Azumi with a flash pin. But then Storm just drops her on her head with a German suplex. Hip attack, Storm Zero, 1, 2, 3, and a big celebration with Mariah May and kisses and cuddles and champagne afterwards.
I thought the action here was really, really, really strong. Again, I've got one minor complaint I want to get out of the way. Ultimately, this is unrelated, ultimately, the CMLL relationship was worth it 1 million times over because that BCC Arena Mexico tag, the atmosphere was like nothing I've heard in years and years and years. Unbelievable. Means to an end stuff. You got some fun TV matches and you got that out of it. Already though, you're thinking, well, the relationship's heavily one-sided. You've got CMLL guys and in, I think Mystico beat Angelico most of the time. Like Jericho beat everyone who he wrestled. Like the BCC on TV beat the CMLL guys in the individual matches. It was just CMLL here, not as good as the AEW guys. And now they're gone. I worry that's going to happen with Stardom, and it shouldn't, because like you really want to preserve the value of Azumi and anyone else who might end up wrestling on these shows, because they're all great. They all have the potential to be stars. They were all the focal point of Stardom, which was before the whole political acrimony, a proper growth product, so we know what they can do. So that's a little bit of a bad omen for the relationship. Maybe I'm overthinking it. Maybe I'm being too presumptuous. Action-wise, as you said, they told the best story they could have. This is one of those things where virtually every single Dynamite in Collision match, and this is a problem, is 50-50, unfancied challenger gives the established star who's always going to win more of a test than they bargained for.
Yes.
5 years of this. This is one of the more effective versions of it. I thought they paced it really well. I thought Toni Storm was brilliant in terms of measuring the threat, in terms of literally overlooking her, which I thought was a really good touch. How it fed into the comeback and how great everything AZM, who am I, Mercedes Money, Azumi, did look great. And when the bombs started getting detonated deeper down the stretch, I was like, bang, bang, bang into this. All told, in and of itself, a really, really strong match. I just do worry that they're going to portray Stardom as lesser than. So what are we really doing here?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, because they've got challenges lined up for their main champions already. You're right. But yeah, like you say, on this card where we didn't get the chance to preview it last week with all the WrestleMania madness, but if I'd have known the entire card beforehand, I'm fairly certain you and I would have called every single result. And as much as I love the main event, this was the match I believed that the person who I thought was definitely going to lose might actually have a shot.
You know what we should have done at the start of the year?
What?
You know what we really should have done at the start of the year?
Mm.
Is we should have done a prediction for every Raw, every announced Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite and Collision match, where we just keep a spreadsheet of, here's who we think is going to win, or every TV match presented on the core programs by WWE and AEW, just to see the percentage.
Yeah.
Because if it's above 90, which I suspect it would be for AEW, at some point that's got to be a problem.
Yeah.
Especially when we've talked at length about how match quality doesn't mean as much as it did a few years ago. just a bit much, innit? It gets a bit bloody much.
Red Velvet's backstage with Lexi now. She says she's not scared of Athena and she'd lay Athena out in the Battle of the Belts main event. She didn't. Athena retained. Mark Briscoe's backstage, though. He's starting to understand the House of Black's MO. They like to strike fear in everyone, but Briscoe feels no fear. Him, Kingston, and Copeland are violent men. They're going to bring the violence next week. So he warns the House of Black to be afraid. Be very afraid. Always love a Mark Briscoe promo like this.
It's absolutely bloody great.
Speaking of good promos, Thunder Rosa comes out on the stage. Granted, with her back to the audience, as we mentioned earlier, but comes out to the stage, thanks the fans for making a comeback so special, for making AEW what it is today. She tells Deonna Purrazzo that she doesn't need her help to win the Women's World title. She didn't need help to get her degree, to earn her citizenship, or win the title for the first time. She thought that Toni Storm was like her, but she says Tony's lost her mind. Talked about dying a little inside when she had to give up the world title. And at Dynasty, she's going to carry more than the title, though. She's going to carry the pride of her people. If she has to break every bone in her own body to uplift and empower the women of the locker room, she'll do it. Storm made a big mistake when she tried to erase the mask on her face. And as she's doing this, she's rubbing the face paint around, smearing it across her face. And she says, next week, she's coming to drag Toni Storm's soul to hell. What a sign-off line.
Great line. Built towards brilliantly. Probably the best live promo I've heard Thunder Rosa cut.
Yeah.
From the debacle when she, and independently of her, CM Punk had to drop the men's and women's world titles. The difference in how that was presented on this evidence, that's more of an embarrassment for AEW because she absolutely could and should have done that. Really, really good. I think that match needed some proper build. We got it. I had no complaints at all. I mean, they've signposted what's happening.
Yes.
But that's fine.
I drag you to hell.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Deonna Purrazzo's luckily standing by immediately after this. She says, look, if you don't want my help, Thunder, that's fine. I'm a workhorse. I could make excuses about not being champion, but instead I'm going to do something about it. Mariah May versus Deonna Purrazzo next week on Dynamite. She's going to break May's arm.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts, but I'll reserve those for the preview.
Okay. But we've got one women's match already, that means. In the interim now, next couple of days.
Shut up, man.
And then also Tony Schiavone informs us that Bucks FTR at Dynasty for the World Tag Team titles is now a ladder match.
Hey, I get it. People are bored of ladder matches, but people were also kind of bored of the FTR versus Bucks program. Look, the whole point is, and they're getting there, I think everyone realized what's going to happen is that they're probably going to work together, knowing how AEW's booking patterns do things, about 10 times off and on. They'll revisit it, and they'll end up doing, what, 6-4 or 5-5?
Yeah.
It's fine. It's how the politics of this sort of program works.
I was convinced Bucks were winning at Wembley. I couldn't believe that.
I can't remember. I don't think I felt much that way, one way or the other. Basically, the Bucks are winning this. They have to.
Yes.
It's an easy way to say, well, you didn't pin us, and you've only done it once, and we're better than when we were. It's just a political game that gets played. but honestly, I'm happy with this. The Bucks and ladder matches are absolutely fantastic. FTR have had one, in my estimation, against the New Day. And it was good, not great. I remember the finish being terrible. But I can't remember the exact nature of it. I'm just happy that it's... I just think there's no juice, really. I really liked the All-In match. I think I was one of the only ones. It's one of those where it's like, it's so harsh. At the 4-star level, a really great last 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much great stuff in the last 7 minutes, but, I mean, they have teased this as the ultimate tag of all tag matches. Have they ever hit that ceiling? I think they did in the first, but it was bittersweet. I just think it's a good idea. I do.
I like this.
Do a ladder match.
I like the story of, yeah. My concern now, you said that, is FTR's lack of experience. Dax will be sat there saying, I don't know much about ladder
match. I ain't no ladder match guy.
quick promo from Cole Fletcher and Powerhouse Hobbs before the main event. They say basically Ospreay's going to make easy work of Bryan Danielson and Claudio over the next week. Because, of course, yeah, we've got Ospreay, Claudio.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
And Hobbs basically said, we're ready to pay all the fines that we're about to get given to us off the back of what we do tonight. And it's off to the races. BCC, Brian Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli versus...
Very quickly.
Oh, my God.
Versus Carl Fletcher and Powerhouse Hobbs. Jumpstart. They big brawl around inside the ring, outside the ring, etc. Eventually, Fletcher sends Claudio to the floor and Hobbs hits him with a body block to take us to break. Then Claudio just starts doing horse stuff, muscles Fletcher around into a gut-wrench suplex. Danielson gets the tag, he runs wild, tries to dive on Hobbs. Hobbs stumbles but catches him and then just slams him into the apron over and over and over again. Danielson countered a power slam, sending Hobbs into the post and hit a running knee off the apron. Fletcher came in with a flying kick and then Castagnoli came flying in with a running uppercut to Fletcher. And they go into the crowd again as we go to another break. After the commercial, it was unfortunate what happened here because I see what they were trying to do and it was always going to be a reversal into a backdrop onto the safe part. But they tried to expose the concrete and then just, you know, awkwardness. The floor just sort of flops back and into all that. Carl Fletcher gets reversed by Danielson into a back body drop. Hobbs gets Danielson on his shoulders, but Castagnoli fights Hobbs to the floor. And instead, on the top, Danielson hit a avalanche belly-to-back suplex for a near fall and put Fletcher in the lapel lock. But Hobbs,
Fletcher's selling of this was unbelievable as well.
It's really good, Fletcher.
Broad. I'll talk about Fletcher in depth, though.
Hobbs comes in to break that up. They set Danielson up for Ragnarok, but Danielson shoves Hobbs into Fletcher, tags in Claudio. He sends some European uppercuts to both men. Gets Hobbs, giant swing, puts him in the sharpshooter. Fletcher comes in to kick him, and you think, okay, he's going to kick you, let go. And he just stands there and takes it. Danielson comes flying in. Fletcher sees him, though, hits him with a super kick. And this is when Claudio drops Hobbs. Swiss death uppercut to Carl Fletcher. But when he turns back around, Hobbs is back up. Big spine buster from Powerhouse Hobbs for a near fall. They all brawl to their feet. Danielson dumps Carl to the floor, hits him with a dive. Death Valley driver from Claudio gets a two count. Hobbs just shrugged off a clothesline, but then a huge lariat from Claudio gets another near fall. Fletcher distracts. Castagnoli just trips him slightly to allow Hobbs to hit him with a world's strongest slam, but this time Danielson breaks up the pin. Hobbs goes to get a chair to hit Danielson with it, but the referee takes it away. And Fletcher dives onto Danielson, clears the announce table, but Claudio takes out both of them on the floor. Hit Fletcher with a neutralizer in the ring and got the 1-2-3. Kind of all about the post-match, though, because after the match, here comes the monster. He looks taller every time I see him, especially in that jacket. Konosuke Takeshita jumps both men. They lay out the BCC, and Takeshita hit Danielson with a brainbuster to injure him on the ramp whilst Claudio chases him off with a chair as the show goes off the air. So I suppose technically they didn't win the match, but mission accomplished for the Don Callis family. Regardless of that, what a match.
This match was class. I want to talk very briefly about Kyle Fletcher, brackets general.
Yeah.
Me and Murray went to the Supercard over WrestleMania weekend. Very long, very good, very long. But we watched Lee Johnson versus Kyle Fletcher. And it was absolutely unbelievable in terms of the action. The rap on Fletcher, and you have to be careful. Like, do you just believe it because it gets told to you so often, or do you want to make your own mind up? But the idea is that the lineage of ridiculous athlete slash super worker, big match extraordinaire goes Omega, Ospreay, and Fletcher's the heir apparent.
Yeah.
And I've seen elements of him being great, but not Omega great. Against Lee Johnson, he looked like different gravy. Absolutely different gravy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to invoke the culture war.
Uh-oh.
Sorry. Watching Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso 24 hours later, I'm thinking this is absolutely pathetic. And the worst thing about building this crap, terrible match around a super kick party... So they're not even that good at super kicks.
No.
That'd be a terrible story and just a really one-dimensional match. They're not even that good at the kicks. If you compare Jimmy Uso's super kick versus Kyle Fletcher's running kick to the face, basically, it's ridiculous. Like, I think the two most impressive moves I've seen in pro wrestling, away from the ones with all these convoluted rotations, are Kenny Omega's V-trigger and Will Ospreay's Hidden Blade. because I watched both of those moves and the very best executions of them. It's like, how you're not concussing people with that? Mm-hmm. Like, I see like the very best V triggers when they're just so perfectly timed, and he smacks his thigh so hard that it's like it just sounds like watermelon on concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You think, how have you not concussed anyone? It's because you're a genius and your physical timing's unlike anything else. The hidden blade's the same. Like I've seen, I can't remember who he hit it with. I think it was on a Rev Pro show where Ospreay hit someone with a hidden blade, and it's like, what? You see that image of Shota Umino's face last year?
No.
Like where he just looks like his flesh has gone in all kinds of different directions when he's getting hit with it. It's like, how on earth have you not like just given someone brain damage with that? And it's because they're amazing at it. Kyle Fletcher, his sprinting kick to the face is like the next version of that move.
Mm-hmm.
How on earth does he appear? It's literal magic. It's literal sleight of hand or sleight of foot or whatever. Like, it just looks so vile. Just sounds so gruesome. It looks so devastating. What a kill shot. Anyway, Kyle Fletcher's awesome. And he was awesome in this match. Like, you can just tell he's got that. Some people don't like this about that breed of wrestler because they think it's a little bit too flashy, a little bit too showy. But he's got that intent of, I'm desperate to show people how good I want to be and how good I can be. Like just those chops on Danielson. It's like he just wants to go in there and be that guy every single night. I get it. Some people don't like it. When you're caught up in the thrill of this match, it's just, I find it intoxicating personally. He was on fire. You watch matches like this and you think, well, you know, Claudio Castagnoli should be some kind of TNT or international champion doing a weekly open. When he's purring, when he's on this form, he just looks like a complete and utter monster.
Mm.
He's the horse. He's like, it's like watching a magnificent beast. It's like watching a magnificent beast in that ring, be an animal, be a force of nature. Like, have you ever been around like a horse, watching them gallop?
Yes.
Like, that's freakishly strong and fast, and you just look like a different. That's Claudio. He's a human horse, to use the Kevin Steenism. And I think on an individual performance level, everyone looked fantastic. Everyone in this match is fantastic. But I remember I watched it yesterday afternoon, and I did the old 1 hour 30. The entrance is starting. I'm thinking, is this just going to feel a bit paddy, a bit padded out in that sort of the way that the collision main event can sometimes go?
No.
Escalated, somehow justified every second of its runtime, felt more chaotic as it went, felt more violent as it went, felt more dramatic as it went, never stopped peaking, just a complete and utter sprint that was also a marathon. An excellent, excellent match when the collision main event can sometimes go a bit long for its own sake. And I can drift out of the double heats, personally. I was just locked in for the duration. I thought that the pacing, the execution, like, this felt like a spectacle of a match in an atmosphere that did not really feel like a spectacle. Just an incredibly impressive achievement. Kyle Fletcher is the real deal.
Mm. Yeah, a great match. And I really like the post-match in terms of, you know, Takeshita comes in and just destroys because he's just going to be such a megastar to Konosuke Takeshita because look at
him. He's insane. He's a magnificent beast.
And hopefully this is the catalyst for Ospreay to officially go, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I want to face the best version of Danielson. I thought, and you ungrateful bastard. Like, not to get ahead of ourselves for the Dynamite preview, but that's, yeah, cool, great.
Yeah. I will say the post-match attack half justified the premise of the main event, which, as I mentioned, was kind of ridiculous when it runs in parallel with what Ospreay has been doing at the exact same time.
And then, obviously, we got Battle of the Belts, where no belts change hands. So
never do.
But let us know your thoughts on AEW Collision on X at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcast. The Raw preview is available right now, and I'll be back a little bit later on today to review SmackDown. But for now, this has been the AEW Collision review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.